And a good morning to you, and welcome to the show. The Back Nine Boys Golf Show is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Play the ball that is fit for you. By Kent Wool, the world's best sock, and by Sea Palms Resort, where good things are happening. On the show today, we're going to talk about no fans at the RSM Classic with tournament director Todd Thompson. And then we'll talk with Rob Spellman of Golf Aficionado as he takes us to Pinehurst and why it is always a great day there. And then finally, we'll talk with Dr. Bob Jones IV, a sports psychologist and grandson of legendary Bobby Jones. And we'll talk about the Masters in November, his thoughts on that, and the Bobby Jones golf course in Atlanta, and a few other Bobby Jones things. But first up this morning is RSM tournament director Todd Thompson. Todd and I talked about this year's tournament.
The RSM Classic this year obviously will be different compared to years past. We had to make the announcement this week that we're not going to allow fans on property. That doesn't mean nobody will be out here, because obviously we got players, we got caddies, we got media, and a number of volunteers. So the area will have a lot of people. Just unfortunately, we can't sell tickets to the public.
And not having any fans is what the golfers have now unfortunately been used to since all this started. But what does this do to your volunteer base? It takes you down from what number to what number?
Approximately, we're always around the 1,200 total number. So we'll end up with between 400 and 500 total volunteers, but there's just a lot of areas. One of the good examples, walking Standard Bear. Well, if there's no fans out here, nobody needs to see a sign with a player's score on it. But we'll have like walking scores, we'll have registration people, we'll have marshals, all that kind of stuff, and security. So we do have a number, and the need's still huge, and we appreciate the local community helping us out.
Yeah, I know it's a tough decision to not have fans, but you got to look out for the safety. And tell us some of the things that the PGA Tour and y'all will be doing as far as making sure the testing that's going to happen. I know there's a test that Jay Bird told me about that you can have the results within an hour. Tell us a little bit about that process.
So before a player can come down the Avenue of the Oaks, we'll have testing off-site this Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And a player will go through that testing, which is provided by the tour, and they do a rapid test. I mean, it's a full-blown test. It's just a rapid result. But between 45 minutes to an hour and a half, the player will get the results. The caddy, our staff, anybody that's going to be in close proximity, the players will have to go through this. And then if they're cleared, they can come down the avenue to the property, where our two golf courses are at the lodge. And then they get registered. And then every day, if you're negative, every day you come through, you get screened. And if you're still good with, no temperature, no symptoms, then you'll get a new wristband or different color dot or whatever that week, each day, so that you're cleared to be on property.
Yeah, a lot of precautions that you now have to take that we haven't had to take in the past. What other changes as far as the RSM are going to happen? There will be no concert, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, no concert for the community, which is, huge, and the hospital's been behind us with that. And obviously, the hospital, who was right in the middle of all this, none of us can afford to put a whole big group of people together and have the possibility of them getting sick. We can't do wiffle ball. We can't do the charity putting contest. But that's all bad news. But the good news is we are going to do some stuff virtually, so that our partners, RSM Corporate, their employees, their customers can see some things that go on here at the Golden Isles and Sea Island. That we do here at the RSM Classic, so they'll see what we have here, know that it's special, and hopefully come back in 2021.
Can you talk about any of the virtual things that will happen during the tournament that you're going to do?
A lot of them will be player-related. We have some ideas. No specifics have been laid out yet, but it's going to be, fortunately we have a Pro-Am. We did get our Pro-Am back, which is huge news, so players will be on property on that Wednesday. We'll have amateur guests. They'll all have to be tested, of course. But it could be interviews. It could be some fun things we do on Facebook Live. Many different issues. But we'll be able to announce those soon coming up.
But there are also, as far as changes, due to this situation, there will be no Pro-Am on Monday and only one Pro-Am on Wednesday instead of two like you have in the past.
Yes, Monday's out because due to the fact that RSM, that was pretty much their pro-am that BMW sponsored because it was a lot of their guests, and it was a smaller pro-am. So Wednesday was still Wednesday's one pro-am. Now, sometimes we have two waves, and we still may have two waves. It depends on how many we sell. So we're trying to sell those because that revenue generator for us helps us tremendously on raising the charity dollars.
Right, right.
So anybody that does want pro-am information, you know, contact our office or go on the RSM Classic website and let us know that you need info on that because that's available. It's going to look a little bit different this year, but we'll make it as best we can for the experience.
Now, I know that I was one of the volunteers. I got the email saying that there aren't going to be any marshals on certain holes, which is what I did over the years, but that you would donate the money back to the RSM. I think that's a great gesture and a great thing for them to do. Have you had any update as far as how that's going with Christian handling that?
It's going well. You know, we've had some people that want a refund, which is understandable, and some that want to donate the money to the charity. It's kind of been, roughly off the top of my head, a 75% in favor of leaving money with us as opposed to 25%. But, yeah, I mean, we understand if people are want their money back in their uniform and don't want to donate it, then we're good with that.
All right, let's talk about the obvious. The Masters is the week before. Hilton Head has always had the Masters before their tournament, and now you have it. Do you think that will make a difference in your field, coming that you're the last event for this season?
I do this year due to the fact that the Race for Dubai has been moved later in December. So if a top player, European player, is in the Masters, there's no rush for him to get home. We're 3 hours down the road. A number of the European players use a couple of the, you know, Phil Kenyon and Justin over here that teach them, and hopefully they'll come down. Personally, I think we'll get a better field. Not a better field as in number of players, but a better field as in world-ranked players.
Right.
Just because the Masters is the week before. The bad thing is if we do get a great field that's higher ranked with world rankings,
there's no fans.
We don't have fans there to watch it, but it'll be seen on TV.
And yeah,
we'll have the
aerial
coverage, and Golf Channel will run the whole event, so people will get to see great golf, but just not up close and personal.
All right, you're Davis Thompson's dad. He's had an unbelievable year. Jones Cup, played in a couple of big tournaments, played in the amateur. How's it been for you as Davis's dad, watching him play unbelievable golf like he has?
It's been, what can I say? It's been great. He works hard. He loves the game. He's developed well. He's got a great teacher. He's got a great group. You always hear guys talk about team, which, you know, he does. In the realm of the team, his instructor, he works out a lot. His coaches at school, our family, so he just works hard, and he's played well at the right times, and which is golf and anything is so much on timing. We had a great time out at Bandon Dunes for the USAM. Of course, you always want to win. There's usually only one really happy player at the end of the event, but yeah, he did well in stroke play, made it to match play, and played well that day, but just got beat.
That is Todd Thompson, the RSM Tournament Director, talking about no fans this year. Next up is going to be a trip to Pinehurst with Rob Spellman of Golf Aficionado, and then Dr. Bob Jones, sports psychologist and grandson of Bobby Jones. And if you're thinking about what you might want to eat tonight for dinner, let us give you a suggestion. Make it easy, because they at CJ's Italian Restaurant make it easy for you. You call up, give them your order, you drive up, they come out, they bring your order. It is that easy. So check out CJ's Italian Restaurant, their full menu at cjsitalianrestaurant.com. And they are known for their deep dish pizza, but their thin crust is just as good. And their cauliflower pizza crust, which comes in a medium, is also just as good. Check out their monthly specials created by the local elementary schools, and then they give back to the kids. Actually create their own pizza. Some of the ingredients are interesting, but they are good, because the money, some of it, goes to the schools where the kids created the pizza. But, you know, they do everything right the way they should. They do it fresh every day. All their ingredients are made fresh every day. They're prepping right now. But check out the full menu and go see Graham and Ada at cjsitalianrestaurant.com.
This is Carter Collins, head men's golf coach at Georgia Southern University, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
And welcome back to the Back Nine Boys. I'm Rich Stiles. Glad you're with us. You know, Pinehurst, when I lived in North Carolina, of course, it didn't matter whether I lived there or not, but it's always been known as a great place to play golf. A lot of history, the famed number two course, the redo of number four, the Payne Stewart statue, and his win in 1999 at the U.S. Open. And it's just a great place. And a friend of ours, Rob Spellman of Golf Aficionado, took a trip there. And good morning, Rob, and let's hear about your trip to Pinehurst.
Hey, Rich, always good to talk to you, man.
Always good to talk to you, too. So you took the drive up to Pinehurst, or the flight. It's just a very, very special place.
Yeah, I mean, it's... you know, for America, you know, they call it the cradle of American golf. Just so much of the early beginnings, you know, the popularity of golf and the growth of golf. Back in the early 1900s, you know, a lot of people credit Pinehurst for that, you know, really helping to establish the roots of the game in America. So it's a special place. You mentioned it, you know, it's hosted so many championships,
yeah.
You know, multiple U.S. Open championships, U.S. amateurs, Walker Cups. I mean, you name it, and they posted it.
Yeah, it definitely is. I was there in 99 watching Payne Stewart and the groups going through. But, I mean, he just had such a charismatic personality. And just having him win like he did at Pinehurst on Father's Day and beat Phil Mickelson by making that putt. Did you go over by the statue and take some pictures like a lot of people do?
Oh, yeah. You know,
oh, yeah.
It's a lot like Bay Hill, right? When you go, you got to get a picture with the
yep.
Arnold Palmer statue.
Yep.
You got to go do the Payne Stewart pose
yep,
at Pinehurst.
So what courses did you play while you were up there?
We had a chance. We played two, four, and three, believe it or not, which, you know, most people don't talk about three very often, but we actually got out and enjoyed that short little course, too.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about, you know, play the even courses. I mean, two has got such a long history of it. Four has been recently redone, and I've heard nothing but great things about it. But a lot of people don't play the odd number courses because all the publicity and all the media talks about number two and number four. So those are obviously their premium courses. But they've got such a wide selection of courses and designers that you can choose from.
Yeah, and you know, you go there and it's kind of like a pilgrimage, right? You gotta play number two.
Yep.
And you know, a lot of people don't realize after the last U.S. Open there, Corin Crenshaw were able to come in and do a redesign or kind of a makeover.
Yeah.
And did a fabulous job. The real, you know, they left their imprint, you know, with their naturalistic design.
Right.
You know, two's it's a funny course. Rich, have you had a chance to play it? I know you've been down there a few times.
Yeah, I actually got to play it with Ben in the foursome ahead of Ben Crenshaw when they reopened it. And they said they took out 500 and some odd sprinkler heads in order to redo the course, as you said, in the naturalistic state.
Yeah, and it's, you know, having played multiple courses there, and I was actually, my daughter was playing in the U.S. Kids Teen World Championship, which Pinehurst is a huge backer and
right,
they're doing a lot for youth golf, and you know, it's just a good story,
right?
But so I got to caddy for three or four rounds on number five, so I got very familiar with a lot of the courses there. And you know, my favorite walking away were definitely, you know, two and four,
right?
I thought two, it surprised me. You know, it was a very playable course. You know, a lot of times you see these courses, especially if they've hosted U.S. Opens, right? They
right.
get that notorious reputation for
right.
being, you know, one of the hardest courses in the world.
Right.
But, you know, it's all about the greens on number two. You know, I thought, you know, there's trees, but not a ton of them. If you hit it straight, but really it comes to, you know, putting on those greens. You know, they still have those old Donna Ross characteristics.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're not careful, you know, I was on the first in regulation in my first putt. You know, I went off the green, rolled down, you know, and I ended up having to chip back. You
that's
know?
Pinehurst, and that's Donald Ross.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And when we played four, I was surprised because the last time I was down there, Gil Hans was just putting the finishing touches on the renovation on number four.
Right.
It wasn't open. I wasn't able to play it. And got to play it this year and was just really, it was the first time I played four. Really impressed by it. I mean, from tee to green, an extremely difficult course. I'd have to say, you know, even harder than number two.
Really?
Yeah, but I think the green complex is a little bit more friendly. But tee to green and the elevation, you know, to me, you know, Pinehurst, you get a little bit of hills. You get kind of the more rolling, gentle hills.
Right.
But as you're walking four, I mean, by the time you finish 18, you feel it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something else. But
yeah. I think the elevations on four are much more pronounced than they are on number two. I mean, there's some holes, as you said, that are elevated and some holes you're hitting down into. So you really got to make a better choice as far as which club to use.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, to be honest, we had a ball. I mean, we really spent a lot of time every night over on the cradle.
Yeah.
The putting course.
Isn't that fun? I mean, talk about a fun course. I mean, you don't need windmills. They've got all these little hills and valleys and stuff. I mean, it is a great, fun putting course.
Yeah, the putting course is amazing, but, you know, they've got nine holes that Gil Hans put in, you know, when he did the work on number four.
Right.
You know, and it's just, I'd heard a lot of people talk about the cradle and what a great experience it was. You get out there kind of around 5-6 o'clock, you get a cocktail, they've got the music playing, you know, you bring a wedge and a putter with you, and that's really, you know, you don't really need much more than that. But,
right.
I mean, we had a blast, and it was just, you know, that typical Gil Hans, Coren Crenshaw, Tom Doak type, that naturalistic type feel just right off, you know, right off the steps of the porch at the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Or the main resort.
You know, and I know I took my brother there one time who had never been to Pinehurst, and all we did was we drove up and just sat at the 18th hole on the veranda and just watched the people come into hole 18 with such history. And that was even an enjoyable afternoon.
Oh, yeah. It's just a great atmosphere. I mean, even if you don't, you know, you got to pay the bucks to play number two, but
right.
It's definitely worth it. I highly recommend it. But if not, it's just worthwhile to make the trip, visit the clubhouse, like you said, have lunch out on the porch.
Yep.
And just kind of take it all in.
Yeah. And did you take caddies?
I didn't this year.
Okay.
When I played two in the past, I did take a caddy. Having played it before and having the caddy, you know, I felt, you know, let me try it on my own. And, you know, we had a good time, but we were fortunate. We played it with a couple of members.
Oh, okay.
We had some of the local knowledge there with us.
Okay, because I was just going to ask you, I mean, usually when you get a caddy, it's because you're not as familiar with the course as you'd like, but especially at Pinehurst number two, and I'm sure number four now, the reeds on the greens are also, you know, you want to be in the middle of the green, as if I had control of that. But you want to be here, and your putt's going to break left. That's why you need a caddy.
Yeah, you know, and you know my game, Rich. I'll take all the help I can get.
Don't we all?
Some
of the stories, though, and I know you didn't take one this time, but some of the stories from some of the caddies that have been there a while are just priceless. I mean, they're just, you know, here's where Sam Snead hit a 4-iron to the green and eagled the hole or birdied the hole and, you know, won a tournament. I mean, you get caught up in the stories about what's happened at Pinehurst.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, caddies are such a big part of it, you know, and they do have a really strong caddy program at Pinehurst.
Yeah, they do.
So always recommend taking a caddy if you can.
Yeah, but, you know, they've got nine courses, I mean, plus the cradle. It's just a golfer's dream. And the putting area, you know, the putting green before you go out is huge.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it really started. You've seen them pop up, but, you know, Bandon Dunes has the punch bowl. Stream Song has the gauntlet. Pinehurst, the name of that one, it's like the – it's a German name, I think, but it eludes me right now. But, you know, they're popping a ball over because
it's
great, and people love them. I mean, you can get the families out there. And we were there, you know, there with the U.S. Kids event. And, I mean, it was just imagine, you know, hundreds of kids out there on the cradle and the spilling over on the putting green and
right.
just enjoying the game of golf and, you know, out there having fun with friends and, you know, meeting people from, you know, all around the country. So it's just a great experience.
Yeah, and it's just great to have a place like Pinehurst with all the history of supporting so much the U.S. kids, which your daughter plays in, which, as you said, playing at Pinehurst, it's got to be a must trip.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for us, Rich, right, like it's definitely a bucket list trip, but, you know, for the kids to experience something like that early on. And, you know, one thing about Pinehurst when you get there, it's always a first-class experience. The
right.
conditions are always immaculate, out of this world. The greens are going to be perfect. The fairways are manicured. I mean, it's postcard golf.
Yeah, definitely.
Ideal conditions.
Yeah, and I love when you walk into Pinehurst and you're walking towards the pro shop, all the interesting displays that they've got inside. I just find it fascinating, and sometimes you can get lost in there, and you go, oh, I got a tee time. I got to get down to the pro shop.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely part museum for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the Payne Stewart. Yeah, you've got a lot of stuff that's in there, and just some incredible photos and, you know, golf clubs and golf bags and stories. That's a lot about what Pinehurst is about, is all the history of golf, especially in that area.
Yeah, and, you know, people don't realize when you go to Pinehurst, it's an experience. I
mean, right.
We're not just talking about the resort. We're talking about the town of Pinehurst.
Right.
And it's a town 100% old-fashioned Americana, dedicated 100% to golf. I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to think of another area in this country or another town that is so devoted to golf.
Oh, I could think of a couple. Bandon Dunes would be one. You've been there.
Well,
Sea Island.
I love Bandon, but
yeah.
Bandon's all about the resort, right?
Yeah.
When you get outside of the resort, it's more of a fishing community. But, you know, with Pinehurst, it's you get outside of the resort gates and, you know, there's all these other golf courses there, you know, all the supermarket. I mean, the funny story, Rich, you know, I like to shop when I'm out and around and kind of explore the town. And we went to the supermarket there, which it was really, it catered towards golfers. They even had it was a Harris Teeter, and they had a walk-in cigar humidor. I mean, like a full-on.
At a Harris Teeter.
Inside the store, yes. Only in Pinehurst, you know.
Did they have any yardage books or anything in there?
They had some apparel, but I didn't see any yardage.
Well, Rob, we can't thank you enough about telling us about your trip to Pinehurst. It is a wonderful place to go, but people may not know about Golf Aficionado. Give them your website so they can go to it and find out more about what you do.
Yep, thanks, Rich. Yeah, so you can Google Golf Aficionado will come up first, or you can go directly to the website, which is golfaficionadomag.com. Sign up for the newsletter we send out once a month, typically at the end of the month, highlighting the stories from the past month. We give a hat away to every 10th person that signs up.
You do?
Lots of good content.
Wait,
a great way to connect with, you know, golf courses and resorts across the world.
You give away hats to people that sign up? Really? Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. No wonder I don't have a hat. Okay. But does...
Hey, Rich, it's my mom's birthday today, so I'd like to take a second and just wish her a happy birthday. She turned 72 years young today.
Way to go. Happy birthday, Rob's mom. And when you and Greg play, who wins?
Well, I was going to ask you. I know you recently hosted him. And he says I'm his kryptonite, so whenever he plays with me, he typically loses. But as soon as he gets away from me, he said he normally has no problem shooting in the low 80s or better.
He did. We were matched well. Let me just put it to you that way.
All right, cool.
All right.
Hey, Rich, we're headed to Pebble Beach over Labor Day weekend. So I'd love to come back and talk to you about that sometime in the future.
Always glad to talk about all the trips I lived through you. Thank you very much, and thanks for being with us.
Yep, sounds good. Appreciate everything.
Rob Spellman, golf aficionado, travels a lot to some of the greatest golf destinations. Hey, it's just a lot of fun to go to different places and play golf. And we're going to talk a lot more fun with Dr. Bob Jones, grandson of Bobby Jones, and a sports psychologist. We're going to talk about how many thoughts may be in your head when you're standing over the ball. Interesting. We'll be back on the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
This is Anna Roy, Public and Media Relations Manager for Visit Mississippi Gulf Coast, and you're listening to Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
And welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. Next up, a good friend and a great guy, Dr. Bob Jones IV, sports psychologist and the grandson of Bobby Jones. Good morning, Dr. Bob, and welcome back to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
Hey, great to be with you. It's always good to be on the show.
It is always great to have you, and I know a lot of things are happening. We got East Lake, the Tour Championship coming up, but let's jump right in. I want to ask, when I say your grandfather, Bobby Jones, what is the first thing that comes to your mind?
Excellence.
Okay. I know that was kind of an interesting first question, but
Yes, it was.
Do you ever get tired of people asking you about your grandfather?
Do you know, when I was younger, I did, because frankly, growing up with the name Bobby Jones and having my grandfather as my grandfather,
right?
It was very, very intimidating. And finally, when I got to be somewhere in my middle 40s, I realized, you know what? Being this man's grandson is the greatest honor I could ever possibly have.
For sure.
And I realized, you know, if I don't start being the one to tell his story, then I am leaving the legacy of Bobby Jones to be defined by people who may know a lot about him, but never actually knew him.
Hmm.
And so now that I'm in my middle 60s, no, I never get tired of being asked. I have been asked by people who I just run into at the Bobby Jones Golf Course in Atlanta.
Right.
I've been asked by clients of mine who come into my office for totally unrelated issues. And I always enjoy telling them about my grandfather. Telling them about his life, because I think there's so much, and I think we can do this with any life,
right?
But I think in his life, there is so much that we can learn about how to approach both the great milestone events on the positive side and the very, very difficult things on the negative side from my grandfather. So that's a very typically long-winded answer to a very concise question. So sorry about that, but
no,
that's my answer.
That's,
so there you are.
That's what we want, because, you know, I want to know about that from you and about him.
Sure.
And when I asked what was the first thing that came to your mind, you said excellent. So was he a perfectionist?
Well, to a point he was. I mean, nobody can achieve what he achieved in golf and not have a very strong, both perfectionistic and competitive streak to them.
Right.
But he tempered that with a real genuine love of people. So there was quite a bit of balance. There was quite a bit of balance to the man. And I think you see that throughout much of his life. I mean, look at it this way. How many people do you know that would have the capability to do a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering, which is a very obviously scientific, driven kind of program, and then turn around immediately afterward and do another bachelor's degree in English literature? Minor in classics.
Yeah, and
so balance is really a hallmark of his life.
And then to get into, how did he get into golf? Did his dad get him into it?
No, they moved out to East Lake when he was five years old, maybe five and a half, and a man named Fulton Colville had, and this is going to be a surprise to anybody that's a golfer, a man named Fulton Colville had a one iron that he couldn't hit, and who knew?
Yeah.
And anyway, he went to the East Lake Golf Shop, and he had it cut down to my grandfather's size, and he gave my grandfather that old club and a ball. And Bub said after that, that just kind of made it pretty simple. And about the same time, and Bub would cut two holes in the dirt road in front of the house where they were staying, about 50 yards apart, and he would spend most of the days banging that golf ball up and down between those two holes.
Oh my gosh.
And he wrote in down the fairway, he said, you know, I never really had a hole in one until, and I forget when he mentioned it, he said, but I had many holes in one on that 50-yard golf course in front of our house. The best thing that happened to him in learning golf, though, was when Stuart Maiden became the golf professional at the Athletic Club's East Lake Country Club, because Stuart had a golf swing that was a what's called a Carnoustie swing, a much more kind of upright and flowing motion.
Okay.
And Bub learned not by taking bunches of lessons, but by simply imitating Stuart's swing. So that's really how he got started. He actually never had a formal lesson. He learned mostly by imitation.
Wow. And that's still today. I mean, videos are out, and people just marvel at his golf swing and the fluidness and the ease that it looks like he's swinging the club.
It is, and it does look like ease, but in fact, people forget that that my grandfather was an incredibly powerful golfer. The late Paul Runyon used to say that Bobby Jones could take his driver back and stop it at parallel and then hit it out there about 240 yards, which back when you're playing with those old balls and wooden clubs was a
right.
good poke.
Right.
And then Runyon said, but then if he needed to hit it a little farther, he'd take the club back to parallel and then go back about 10, 15 degrees and then come back through. He said it looked exactly the same, and he would hit it out there about 280.
Wow.
And then if he really needed power, he would take it back to about 30 degrees past parallel. He would come back with the exact same tempo and hit it 300. And Paul Runyon said that what was the most frightening about that is that he could do it every single time.
Wow. I mean, there are people here that wish they could hit two shots the same.
Oh, I think I'm talking to one right now.
I wish. The only thing I hit the same are putts and practice swings.
Isn't that right? Isn't that the truth?
So what was the best part of your grandfather's game?
I think the best part of his game was twofold. I think he was a phenomenal long iron player, which is no real surprise considering what I told you about how he learned.
Right.
And then the second part that was really good is once he got a putting lesson at Augusta Country Club from Walter Travis in about 1921, 1922, he became probably one of the most deadly clutch putters in the history of golf. The putt that he made at Winged Foot in 1929 to seal the playoff against Al Espinosa on the 72nd hole was nothing short of miraculous. He holed a 40-foot putt at Interlaken to win his fourth United States Open. And I think those two things were, in terms of the technical side of golf, the best parts of his game. On the mental side, I think the best thing that he did was he learned how to regulate his emotions really, really well. So between those two areas, I think that had a lot to do with why he was just, as we like to say, so stinking good.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading about him. I mean, everybody reads about Bobby Jones. I mean, there's so many entities, which I want to talk to you about in a minute, but there was a ticker tape parade for him in New York City, and that is just not done anymore. But at that time, that was a huge, huge deal.
Well, Rich, I have to correct you just a little bit. There were two of them, actually.
Uh-oh.
He had two ticker tape parades. He had one when he returned from England or the United Kingdom in 1926 after winning the British Open at Lytham and St. Anne's. And then in 1930, he had another one when he returned from the UK after winning the British Amateur and the British Open, which prompted the Mayor Jimmy Walker at the time to say it could not be foreseen or foreknown that history would bring together two seemingly glaring poles, namely that the world's greatest golfer should be introduced by the world's worst golfer.
But what a tribute to have a U.S. ticker tape parade. I mean, that's just incredible. All right, in the Atlanta area. There's a lot of other entities of Bobby Jones. I mean, there's the Bobby Jones course. There's now a clubhouse there at the Bobby Jones golf course. There's whiskey. There's a management company. There's an apparel line. Are you involved in all of those?
Yes.
Okay.
In addition to my day job as a clinical sports psychologist at the Behavioral Institute of Atlanta, I am also the president of Jones Ayres, Inc., which is a company that we founded about 30 years ago to protect and develop the name, image, and likeness of my grandfather. When I became president a few years ago, I recognized that we have one thing we have to accomplish. We have to make sure that the legacy of Bobby Jones continues to the next generation, so that the next generation understands exactly who this man was. And I think we do that in three ways. One is we do that first and foremost by telling the Bobby Jones story. And everything we do in terms of product line or in terms of charity has to contribute to telling that Bobby Jones story.
Okay.
So, for example, I mean, if you see the apparel line, you will see photos and a legacy section on the website of who was Bobby Jones. If you go to the whiskey brand, if you even look at the bottle, on the back of the bottle, it will tell you briefly about the story of Bobby Jones. Bobby Jones Links brings the values of Bobby Jones to the clubs that it manages. And, of course, the Bobby Jones Golf Course continues to tell the story just by its very presence and by the cooperation of the city of people within the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia who have come together to tell this story and to make a golf course that is accessible to golfers of all levels, that has a strong emphasis on bringing children and other young people into the game of golf. Also, thirdly, that is very accessible to golfers with physical challenges.
Hmm.
So, yes, there's a lot of focus that we bring to what we do.
Yeah, and I just think that's all fantastic. I think it's great that, you know, you are involved in all of those. Eastlake coming up, another big history. That's where, you know, your grandfather first started when you said he was five and a half. With the tour championship coming up, unfortunately now with no fans, but does this still give you pride knowing that they're played the tour championship at Eastlake where your dad played?
I mean, I don't know how it couldn't.
Yeah.
And you
right.
know, what was really nice for many years, it was almost like the historical legacy of Eastlake was downplayed. Like the historical legacy of Eastlake was downplayed.
Mm-hmm.
And then a number of years ago, the people from the Tour Championship approached us and said, we really want to tie in the legacy of Eastlake and your grandfather into the Tour Championship. And it's just been so great to work
yeah.
with Matt Rapp with the Tour, with Martin Stevenson, and of course with Allison Fillmore. It's
yes.
just been... it's been a wonderful experience, and I'm so sorry it's got to be without fans this year, but I'm sure we'll be back with them next year.
Well, we certainly hope so, and we're going to be back with you right after we take our last break with Dr. Bob Jones, sports psychologist and grandson of Bobby Jones. Stay with us on the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
This is Hudson Swafford of the PGA Tour, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
And welcome back. We're on the phone with Dr. Bob Jones, a sports psychologist and grandson of Bobby Jones. And Dr. Bob, let's get back to sports psychology. You and I, when we first did our interview a long time ago, you said one of the things that golfers come to you and you find out is that they have unrealistic expectations. Why is that?
Human tendency to look at our best rather than our average. It's just a very, very natural human tendency, and it goes all the way from the Duff all the way up to the Touring Pro. In other words, if I've got a hole through the trees about 2 feet wide and I've executed that shot once, and I've been playing golf now for 52 years, if I've done that once in 52 years, well, I've got it in my head that that's the way I should do it. Or people will remember Arnold Palmer or the statement that was attributed to Arnold Palmer that trees are 90% air.
Right. Right.
Which is not true, by the way,
yes.
As I've found out over the years.
Yes.
So here's the thing that I think if you watch touring pros today that they are absolutely fantastic about, they will play the percentages for their game better than a poker player. They know to a tenth of a decimal point what their reasonable expectation for outcome on a shot is. And for the most part, unless they're under tremendous psychological pressure, they won't deviate from it. And yet the average golfer who may hit his tee shot 190 yards will stand up on a par four and immediately take out his driver because he thinks that, oh, good, I can hit my driver and get home in two,
right,
rather than very intelligently playing a first shot into the fairway, a second shot into the fairway, and a pitch that he might hit reasonably, or she might hit reasonably close for a par. So I think what happens is we tend to see the best rather than the average. And that is where people get in trouble.
So how do you help them through this?
Well, I do a couple of different things. I always focus on, I look at three different areas when I work with an athlete. First thing I look at is, what are you doing to physically provide for the needs of that brain that has to do all the things that we're doing? The second area that I look at, so I mean, that's things like hydration, making
right.
sure they're getting enough protein during the round, that they're not eating a lot of sugar, things that, you know, make you mentally sharp, that keep you mentally sharp and keep you from becoming mentally fuzzy. Then the next area we're going to look at is the cognitive. How are you thinking on the golf course? What's your decision-making process for how not only you approach a shot, but how you approach an entire round? That's when we look at pre-shot routines, both the physical pre-shot okay. routine you do and also the mental pre-shot routine, how you collect your data for a shot. And then the third thing, which is actually the most important, is I try to teach people, how do you manage your emotions? If you tend to run hot emotionally, how do we bring you back down into the range where you function the best? Or if you tend to run cold, which is not that common, but it does happen, how do we get you up into that same
yeah.
range? So that is kind of like the three-legged stool that I use, well, really not just for golfers, but really with any athlete. And most of my clients have found it to be a fairly successful approach.
Yeah, I have found, and I've had this discussion with many people about, I used to go to the golf course expecting to shoot between this and this. And what happens if you double bogey the first hole and the third hole and the fourth hole? My expectations are totally out the window.
Well, that happens. You know, I had the same thing happen to me a number of years ago. About 2 years ago, I was playing at the athletic club, my home course, the Atlanta Athletic Club, and I was on our Riverside course, and I was playing pretty well. I was even after four, and my handicap index stays around somewhere between 6 and 8. And I was even after four, and I just had a horrible fifth hole. I got a very strange lie on my second shot, and I triple bogeyed the fifth hole. And I thought, I stayed reasonably calm about it, but I realized, oh, well, you know, I guess that means that I guess this nine's done. And then I ended up birdieing 6, parring 7, parring 8, and birdieing 9, and
wow.
shot 37 on the front.
Whoa.
And shot 36 on the back 9.
Oh, boy.
So here's one of the things that I would say to that. When you have those kinds of blow-up events, it's really important to stay calm.
Okay.
Because you never know what's going to happen on the next shot.
Yep.
Or on the next hole.
Right.
And as I also always tell my clients who tend to run hot, I always tell them, look, you've got all the time in the world to throw clubs and break clubs and have a hissy fit once the round is over.
Right.
While you're on that golf course, you don't have that luxury.
Yep, you're right. You're right. All right, 1 minute left, and I hate it because we're running out of time, but how do you get the voices out of your head while you're standing over the ball?
Voices, that's a whole different problem, Mitch, and you and I can talk about that one privately.
We don't have enough time,
Actually, there are a couple of things you can do for that. A lot of times people will have this self-critical narrative that runs in their head.
Oh, yeah.
And oftentimes, just really working on your breathing, keeping it nice and regular. Sometimes just counting 1, 2, 3 while you're getting ready to hit the shot. You know, like you put the club behind the ball, you look up 1, you look down two, you look up one, you look or three, and then bang, you start the shot.
Okay.
There are a whole bunch of techniques we can do for that. That's just a couple of them.
Well, we can do that on our next interview. Dr. Bob, always a pleasure. Thank you, my friend, for being with us. And
Thank you.
Have fun at the Tour Championship in a couple of weeks.
Well, thank you very much. It's always an honor to be on, Rich, and anytime.
Thank you. Dr. Bob Jones, sports psychologist and grandson of legendary Bobby Jones from Atlanta, talking about things we need to hear and things that we don't need to talk about and things that we don't need to think about. But we want you to think about us every Saturday and Sunday from 8 to 9 right here on ESPNCoastal.com, the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.